What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the White Belt Podcast. A little bit of a different episode for you today. One of my clients, Anna, asked me a bunch of really cool questions, and I thought I'd respond to them here in a bit of a public format because I think there's going to be some really good applicable information, at least just me ranting on my opinion about a few different things. But we're going to cover topics like how many times a week should we work out, thoughts on stretching before or after a workout, views around general nutrition and supplementation, eating before a workout, just some really good stuff to understand that from a less, I'd say, dogmatic perspective, and more just understand the principles behind why you might choose to do certain things or not do other things. That's way more of the space that I'd like people to look at when it comes to different ways of training, or when it comes to different ways of eating or supplementing. More doing it from a place of like, here are all of the different principles that I know and that I can consider. And using that, I'm going to make a decision that's right for me, or that feels right for me, or I'm going to try this experimentation process and then maybe disregard it after a couple of months. Because the real answer is that so many different things work well for so many different people. We all hear this, but then so many different talking heads on, you know, in the fitness space and in the wellness space keep telling you that you should be doing different things, or that you're missing out if you're not doing other things. And my understanding is that's really not how it works. So that being said, Anna, thank you so much for these questions. This is great. And if you guys have any more questions, I'd be also happy to answer them as well. Let's dive into it. Do you recommend I work out 3 or 4 times a week? I'm open to either thinking that 4 slightly shortened workouts may be better than 3 big fat ones. When it comes to how many times a week should you work out, there's a lot of different things to consider. But number one, and one of the things I think is almost more important than what is better than what is one, you know, better than the other, is like what feels right to you and what feels, you know, enjoyable to you, and what do you think you can stick to? And these are more important than whether or not something is objectively better than people think. Because let's just say, I know, for example, this client does a lot of different physical things with her body. So when it comes to doing a structured exercise program, you want to think about, okay, well, like, what else do I want to do with my time? And how much time do I want to dedicate to a really kind of focused training program? If you're going to work with a coach, for example, and you're also playing, you know, a sport a couple of times a week, like, that's going to be a lot of work working with that coach. So a really useful principle to come back to is it's always easier to start with less and then add more than it is to start with more and try and take away. Now, this is something that I got from, you know, it was really beautifully summed up in the recent podcast with Joachim Hildesen. I thought he spoke really well to this, but I'll just add a little bit more of my flavor to this as well. I've made the mistake many times of biting off more than I can chew. And you end up shooting yourself in the foot, because the reality of physiology is that when you're beginning a new program, it takes less work, less training to catalyze an adaptation in the body than it does after you've been doing that program for, let's say, 12 weeks. And this is just really, this comes down to basic overload principle, right? When we're training with a new stimulus, our body's going to adapt a little bit faster to that, to less work. But if you get a guy who's been, you know, doing deadlifts for 10 years, it's going to take more work for him to cause an adaptation than it would be to someone stepping in the gym for the first time. This is why newbie gains occur. So bringing that back to the training frequency, it's like if you can get away with doing slightly less work in the beginning, if you can set yourself up with less, you know, either less time in the gym or less sets, which will just take less time, you're still probably going to see some improvement with that in the beginning of your program. And then as you adapt to that training load, you've left room for yourself in your life to actually add more work. When you start with more, one, you probably don't necessarily need all of it, because like if you've got a 3-hour session plan, for example, there's going to be a lot of sets. People talk about junk volume in inverted commas. There's going to be a lot of the time spent in the gym that's not really contributing to much of a productive training stimulus. You're not really going to adapt twice as much training for 3 hours as you are for training for an hour and a half. That's just not how the body works. So And when you try and start with more, it's also like, and you can't keep it up, or it's feeling painful, or it's feeling like a huge drag to get through. It feels like you're almost losing if you take away from that amount of work. It's like, ah, shit, I couldn't do this. I failed at this. So now I have to do less. Whereas if you just started doing less in the beginning, it would be exactly the same situation, but you just, the perception would be different. So all that is to say that I really think that it's much better to start with a little bit less, start a little bit more conservative, and even walk out of the gym feeling like, I could have done a little bit more. Rather than maybe you get to pat yourself on the back a few times if you walk out of the gym feeling absolutely destroyed. But if you're doing that 4 or 5 days a week, it's going to catch up with you much faster. And you're going to find that you're doing much more stop-start, much more, you know, on-off kind of training than something that you can just do a little bit less of and progress. I follow a lot of very, very high-level athletes and coaches on Instagram, people who are much more above my level. And it's fascinating to see how many of them have to continually remind themselves that it doesn't take as much work to, as much volume, let's say, to progress as they once thought, or they're actually able to still maintain or still make progress with less time in the gym than they thought. It's always really interesting to keep those things in mind. Question number 2. What are your thoughts on stretching either before or after a workout? Do you think it's more important to do before, or are they both equally important? I sometimes feel my body isn't warm enough to stretch beforehand, but maybe that's not actually an issue. The question of stretching before or after a workout is a really interesting one that a lot of people have a lot of different opinions on, as is the case with everything in fitness. But I always like to try and bring it back to, why are you stretching? And once you answer that question, you can start to contextualize what types of stretching and when you might want to do those will be most effective for you. So the number one reason that most people would stretch is to increase the range of motion of the joint, increase the flexibility of one of their muscles. Let's say people do hamstring stretching because they want to have more flexible hamstrings. Now, should you do that before or after a workout? Well, I like to try and dial it back, and I would say that the end goal is to increase the flexibility of that muscle or that muscle group, increase your range of motion in a given position. Maybe it's a split, for example. So the reality is that that's going to take more than just a little stretch in the beginning or just a little stretch tacked on the end as an afterthought. We're going to need to really spend some time working on those tissues, working on both the side that's getting longer. So if we're doing a hamstring stretch, for example, the hamstrings are getting longer, but also the side that's getting shorter. So the hip flexors and the quads, they're shortening at the same time as we're lengthening the backside. And we need to strengthen those on the short range as well. This can take some really intense focus. There's often quite a lot of intensity, quite a lot of volume and time that's required. And often when I find that people are saying, I've been stretching for quite a while and it's not working, or stretching isn't working for me, it's because they're not structured enough in the way that they perform their stretching to increase those ranges of motion. Especially when we consider that we're spending a lot of other time in our lifestyle sitting down. So if number one, you want to stretch either before or after a workout to increase your range of motion, I would make sure that that's either a structured flexibility session and you're really measuring in some way to make sure that that range of motion is increasing and it's not just a little tack on afterthought that you're doing a little bit of it, but it's not really getting you many places. Often when I program for flexibility, there's a little bit of warm up in the prep. There might be some stretching, and we'll cover this in a second, but like the flexibility is the workout, or the flexibility is a part of the workout. Because if you really care, you watch people who train flexibility quite seriously, it's with just as much intensity and just as much focus as people who train for muscle mass or people who train for strength. Now, there is a way to set all of those up and train some of those concurrently, but that's kind of another topic. Why else would we want to stretch before or after a workout? Well, you might want to do it as a warm-up or a cool-down. And when you want to do those things, that's totally fine, so long as you're intentional with the way that you do it. So stretching for a warm-up, for example, if I was going to warm up before a deadlift session, I probably wouldn't want to create too much slack in the system before I've got to pull really heavy shit off the ground. So more often than not, I wouldn't really stretch in the warm-up before a session like that. I wouldn't try and do any hectic flexibility stuff before that because I want tension and I want control and I want power and I want speed. And those are sometimes at odds with a long passive stretch, for example, unless you do some other activation work after that. So when I would stretch before a workout, you know, if I'm going to do a press to handstand session, for me, I always stretch my calves before I do any heavy forward folding, any pancake, any pike, any press to handstand stuff, because stretching that passively will help me gain access to much more range of motion that I'm going to need to use in my strength later on. That's a key area in which I'd be like, cool, I want this particular outcome. Therefore, I'm going to do this particular kind of stretch. And it could be a passive stretch, could be a dynamic or a ballistic stretch. It could be a contract, relax, agonist, contract. There's so many different ways to do it. But these are all just tools in the tool belt. And it's really important to understand, what am I trying to achieve here? And what's the best tool for this job? Rather than saying, always stretch before a workout or always stretch after a workout. Now, just to quickly cover the third one, the last reason that you might want to stretch after a workout is to cool down and maybe prevent injury or maybe reduce soreness. And I'm waving my hands in air quotes if you're just listening to this, because there have been a number of really good meta-analyses, you can look them up online, that kind of look at how much incidence of reduced injury do we actually see from stretching, particularly from a cool down? How much muscle soreness do we see reduced, particularly by stretching from a cool down? And the answer is, it's not really any significant findings to say that passive stretching reduces muscle soreness or prevents injuries. So it's not to say that being more flexible can't actually help you, you know, safeguard against injuries in some senses. It definitely can. But it's just the idea that you have to slap a stretch on the end of your workout or slap a stretch on the beginning of your workout that doesn't really hold up. Just to really fucking beat the dead horse for like the fourth time, be intentional with the way that you set up your routines, with the way that you set up your, you choose your exercises or you choose your stretches. I would say that it's really easy to waste, you know, if you picture the classic runner that, you know, finishes a run and chucks their leg up on a wall and kind of reaches for their toes a couple of times and then goes away. How much have they really accomplished by doing that? Not much. If they were to stop doing that and never do it again, would their results be very different? No. Now, if you were to be more intentional about the way that you stretch around your running training or your any other kind of training, you'd see some real benefit. So the TLDR of that whole thing is, you don't have to stretch before or have to stretch after a workout. Neither one is inherently more important than the other, but you may want to choose to do certain kinds of stretches either before and or after your workout, and also during your workout, depending on the kind of training outcomes that you want. And I hope I gave you some examples there. Number four, I'm going to take a little sip of water. I'm out of water. All right. I think this is actually question three. I'd be really curious to hear your views on nutrition. For example, how important protein is, and if you personally try to stick to a certain quantity per day. Do I also track macros and calories? This is a huge, huge topic, a huge question, and I'm going to kind of skim the surface a little bit in a few different areas. But nutrition is obviously incredibly important. When I think about how important it is and the role it plays when you want to be someone that does cool, badass shit with your body, you're thinking about longevity, you're thinking about wanting to look and feel good, nutrition is obviously a huge and important part of that. But it also, in my opinion, it's easy to get too obsessed about nutrition beyond the point which is productive, in my opinion. When I look at some of the, you know, leading experts in nutrition, for example, it's really easy to find a lot of really highly educated, really smart people who fundamentally disagree on so many things, on so many quite fundamental things as well. And this to me is a huge kind of red flag in the space, that studying nutrition from a really, really top-down perspective is just a really fucking hard thing to do, because there's so much individual variance and so many other factors that contribute to, you know, all of the basic metrics that we want to see, you know, our strength, our longevity. There's so many different factors that isolating particular things and using the same experiment condition for many, many different people just doesn't yield the kind of clarity of results that we would otherwise hope in, let's say, you know, some other kinds of trials. So I think it's really important to approach the nutrition science that we see kind of being bandied around, especially on social media, with a healthy degree of skepticism. And again, we're always trying to bring it back to, what works for you, and how do I do the almost like the bare minimum to like make sure that this is supporting my training goals, making me feel good, not completely fucking destroying myself, and then kind of move on with your life. Because it's so hard to find clear signal, and there's so much noise on the internet, and I only know because I've really looked for a long time. If you want to learn more about how individualized nutrition is, go and listen to one of my earlier podcasts, maybe episode 9, with a guy called Dave O'Brien. And he is an incredibly, incredibly smart man who is really down the rabbit hole on individual gut bacteria and individual gut kind of ecosystems. And what I learned from that podcast, if you listen to it, and I'll just summarize what I learned, the biggest takeaway for me was that, you know, a particular kind of bacteria in one person's gut at one time can mean that they're completely intolerant to one food group. But if you do some work and you change that kind of environment, that gut biome, the same food for the same person at a different time with a different biome can actually have a completely different effect on that person. They can be completely intolerant at one time, and they can be completely fine and able to digest it just, you know, hunky-dory at a different time. And that's the same person in the same food at a different time. So imagine at how much more confusion we have when we zoom out and we find that, oh shit, okay, the same, you know, different people at different times, under different conditions, with different foods. It's really fucking messy. So how do we kind of glean any useful information out of this, you know, this clusterfuck that is nutrition? And I think number one, always use the litmus test of how is this actually working for me? So for example, I have tracked calories in the past. It was a really good learning experience. And what I got from that more was understanding what's in food. What it also gave me was a pretty unhealthy relationship with food, because I did it in a not very sustainably and not very healthy way. I was very obsessive over the way that I tracked my calories. I was very obsessive over the way that I looked at the time. And I had a pretty generally obsessive relationship with training and food at the time. And it really wasn't very healthy for that. So when it comes to tracking calories, should you do it? I think everyone would benefit from doing it for a time. And that time could be 1 to 2 weeks. Because what I used to recommend to people, the way I used to train them around this stuff, was track your calories for 14 days. If you want to do this. You can do it for the first 7 days, and you can take the average, you can take your weight at the same time in the same amount of clothing every single day, and take the average over the first week, and do the same over the second week. And without changing anything, just track what you're eating and just record it down and record the number of calories that you're eating. And you'll also see your spread of macronutrients. So we've got the average weight for the first week, we've got the average weight for the second week, taken at the same time and the same amount of clothing every single day, and then we've got all of our macro data for those 2 weeks. And then you can take the average of the weight in the first week and the average of the weight in the second and compare them. And you can say, at roughly the same amount of average calories taken in over this week, I am currently either losing weight, maintaining weight, or increasing weight. That's really good data for you to have. Because as many fucking online calculators as you can do, they're based on averages, they're not very individual. And just doing that simple 2-week exercise is going to tell you, cool, at this current stage of my life, at my current activity level, how much do I need to be eating to go in the direction that I want to go in? Either to maintain weight and support your training goals, either to, you know, lose weight, gain weight, whatever the fuck you're trying to do. That's a really useful experience to have. Because it's not obsessive about, holy shit, I'm under this number, I have to do this. Oh, holy shit, no, I'm losing weight and I want to gain weight, or vice versa. It's just like, I'm just going to fucking run an experiment, find out what's in my food. And from then you can make small adjustments to what you're already doing. This is the best fucking thing to do, in my opinion. It's like, cool, I'm eating a little bit much right now. And I know this through this little experiment. Let me just do this little tweak. Let me just take a little bit off here. Or I'm actually not eating as much protein as I thought, and my experiment showed me that. So given that I want to increase my muscle mass a little bit more, let me just add a little bit more protein to my diet. And given that I'm maintaining weight right now and I want to keep on doing that, or I want to recomp, I might also eat a little bit less of this other thing so I stay roughly the same caloric intake. These are really, like, it sounds so simple, but it is really that simple. And it's also way less of all of the baggage that comes with like counting macros and you have to be hitting these numbers or you're a fucking, you know, you're not going to lose weight and all this different kind of stuff. I think that you can kind of have your cake and eat it too when it comes to doing this, if you want to do it. So all that is to say, if you want to do it, that is how I would do it. That's how I've told people to do it in the past. And it's what I would do again if I had my time over, because I did learn a lot from that time counting calories and counting macros. But I don't think it's a lifestyle. It's certainly not a lifestyle that I want to live. I did it for years and I'm way happier not doing it. But I've also benefited from the time that I did spend doing it, knowing way more what's in my food. And now when I put on a little bit too much, like, I know, I was just kind of eating a lot since I came back from overseas, and I noticed I put on a bit of weight. My one-arm chin started to get a bit harder. And I was like, fuck, I'm probably just going to cut back a little bit more. And I know how to do that now because I've done so much of that other stuff. So my views on nutrition as far as what you should eat, fuck, man, it is, could be, there are so many different people who seem to be genuinely doing really well at so many different ends of the random spectrums when it comes to fucking veganism and carnivore and keto. And it's like you're able to find a really intelligent, really passionate, really jacked, you know, fucking spokesperson for each one of these things. And so what that tells me is that it's possible to do so many different things. Where I've fallen down in the past is trying to do a thing and force a thing that just actually wasn't working with for me because of some form of dogma or idea. So find what works for you. If you want to count calories, do that as an experiment, as a learning experiment, and do it in the way that I just described, and then let it go afterwards, unless you really like, hey, I fucking love this and it really works for me. And last but not least, protein is incredibly important. Absolutely. You'll see people go as low as 0.8 pounds per, grams per pound of body weight, as high as kind of 1.8 or 2. And the answer is it lies somewhere in the middle. Fucking try it. And as long as you're making progress in the gym, you can expect that you're synthesizing an adequate amount of protein. And I would only really start to look at these things if you're starting to see that what you're doing in the gym is not really working. And you've really looked at your programming and everything was working or it was feeling good. And then you start, you know, it stops, it kind of plateaus. That's the only time I'd really look at, okay, how much protein are you eating? But again, you can find that out from doing another little tracking experiment. So I hope that helped. All right. How important do you think it is to eat before a workout? Some say very. I personally love working out first thing in the morning before eating, but also open and curious to hear any other views. Really similar perspective on this one. It's like, find what works for you. It's like, try it and see. For me, for example, I prefer to train in the evenings. But when I was training in the mornings, I would do that before eating, just because I didn't want to fucking get up out of bed and have a huge meal. I was like, I just don't feel that good doing that. But when I do train in the evening, I do feel stronger and I have eaten by that time as well. Your strength will naturally peak as a result of your hormones. Your strength will naturally peak in the afternoons by a very small margin. So that's also just kind of natural, but different strokes for different folks. Some people love getting up, eating first thing in the morning and going to the gym. Nobody can tell you, like, how you feel in the workout is so important. Sometimes I know, for example, if I fast for too long and I have too much coffee, my handstands go to shit. I like can't catch a handstand. And I'm like, oh man, I feel a bit lightheaded. I don't feel as connected to my extremities. And that's just a personal thing. And that's really important. Like, there might be no data to say that fasting and coffee affects handstand duration, but I personally know that I suck when I do that. So that data is way more important than whatever anyone says that you have to eat before a workout or you don't. It's like, if you try eating before a workout and you feel noticeably stronger and you record, this is why I'm so big on tracking your training, because you can just see how these things impact you. It's like, oh, I tried eating in the morning and I felt more sluggish, and my numbers were actually slightly lower than when I didn't. Or vice versa, I tried eating before training and I was like, oh, I actually feel way more energetic than when I was doing the fasting thing. So try and see what works for you is my biggest piece of advice. Leading into that, any thoughts on fasting or alongside working out regularly? Again, I'm not an expert in fasting by any means. I've done it for prolonged periods of time in the past. And I think of it more as a tool in the tool belt. I'm personally skeptical at a lot of the more magical benefits that people kind of pin on fasting. There's stuff about, you know, cell autophagy and stuff like that, that really this kind of stuff kicks in after a much longer time. And if you're just doing like, you know, a 16-8 type fast where you're fasting, you know, for 16 hours, eating for an 8-hour window, you're kind of kidding yourself if you're thinking you're getting these kind of crazy benefits and fat burning benefits and all this different kind of stuff. Because the reality is that the amount of stuff that you take in and the amount of stuff that you expend is going to be the biggest thing, the biggest, you know, governing factor as to whether or not you're gaining, maintaining, or losing total body mass. So if you're fasting and you're eating in a surplus, you're still going to gain weight, even if you're doing the fat burning thing in your intermittent fasting. And the reverse is also true. With that being said, I personally find fasting like a really convenient way to control the amount that I eat. Because right now, like I said, I just put on a bit of weight, like a few kilos about a month ago. So this last month, I've actually been finding myself fasting quite regularly because I can know I can have a coffee in the morning, a black coffee in the morning, and push my first meal back to about midday. And I end up eating less over the course of the day than if I have three meals. Surprise, surprise. And that's just an easy management tool for myself. So it's like it works. It might not work for any magical reason, but it just works from a more practical perspective. And again, if it works for you, if you enjoy doing it, you know, some people say that for women, it's less good to spend long times, you know, going without food. Again, I'm no expert on the ins and outs of this, but I would really just try and see what works for you. Last but not least, do I have any thoughts, preferences, or experiences with supplements? I have recently started taking creatine, as it seems there's actually evidence behind it, but have been skeptical about the use of supplements in general. So am I. I am also skeptical about the use of, not supplements as a whole, but just the whole, it's a huge industry. So many people who speak about these kinds of things have so much vested interest in you buying shit with their promo code, and I really like to try and keep it real. When it comes to creatine, there is evidence behind it, and if you're going to take a supplement, I think creatine is a great choice, because it is a good amount of evidence. I've used it personally as well. There's a huge amount of it. It's probably the most evidence on creatine when it comes to sports-related supplements compared to anything else for real markers and improved performance and recovery. It's important to understand how creatine works. There's a loading phase, and you've got to take a certain amount of milligrams. I can't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, but taking a certain amount of milligrams for at least 14 days, and then it's in your system, and it's in your system constantly. So that's, if you want to use it, then do the proper loading phase and then do a little, you know, maintenance phase. As far as my understanding goes, you don't actually have to cycle off it like it was originally thought. People are kind of like, no, it's actually pretty safe just to keep going with it. With that being said, because there is a loading phase to get it into your system, those drinks that you see advertised like, hey, this has creatine in it, and creatine is proven by science to help performance and recovery. It's like it is, but if you use the loading phases that are done in those studies, and if you don't, if you just have it as a one-off, it's not actually going to really help you with that recovery unless you're doing it like you're actually doing a creatine protocol. So don't get fooled by the marketing in that sense. The other thing is that creatine is also in food. So taking a creatine monohydrate supplement on top of, like, I eat a lot of red meat, for example, there's a lot of creatine in red meat. So I really don't necessarily think that I'm losing a heap of gains by not supplementing extra when I'm eating a decent amount of red meat, of a high quality red meat. So that's also another thing to consider as well, is that many of the supplements and these compounds that are isolated in the products that these companies are selling occur naturally in food. And when you have a well-rounded diet, you're getting supplements in you're getting these amounts in decent quantities as well. Many people make arguments for the declining mineral and nutrient density in foods, and there's plenty of, you know, debates to be had there. Again, this is not my area of expertise. I'll be the first person to say that. But I've tried so many different things. I used to nerd out so much about supplements and about nutrition and a huge, like the most important thing I can say is my litmus test for all of this stuff is if I stop, do I notice? And so often the answer has been no. I did take creatine for a while and did notice that I felt good in the gym and my recovery was good. I was like, yeah, that shit works for sure. But I'm making the best progress of my life right now. And I have been for the last, you know, I'd say year. And I haven't been using any supplements. I do actually use a protein supplement sometimes just because it's convenient, but not because whey protein is magical. It's just convenient for me when I'm traveling around and I know I'm not going to be able to get protein in. I use it like a, it's like a natural whey protein that has two ingredients. It's from Bulk Nutrients. I don't have a relationship with them. I don't get any money. I don't have a promo code, but it's just the one that I personally use because fucking they're stacked with all this bullshit that I don't really want to be eating. So the vanilla flavor just has grass-fed whey and vanilla bean. So that's a really good one to get. And it tastes pretty good as well. That's what I use. That's the only thing that I use. And I only use it when it's convenient, when I really need it. I'm not religious about taking it either. And there's plenty of times where I don't take it as well. So if I stop, do I notice? For me, the answer with creatine was not really. For me, the answer with pretty much everything else I've ever taken is not really. When I've been doing, for example, cold showers and, you know, other stuff, or like lemon water in the morning, or these kinds of things. Like, if I stop, do I notice? I stop. I did them for ages. I stopped. I was like, fuck, man, I'm still making really good progress. I'm still really enjoying this. And it's like one more thing I don't have to do or spend money on. Like, that's fucking good. So try these things for yourself. If it helps you feel good, do it. The placebo effect's a real thing. And if you're placeboing your way to good recovery, as long as it's not stacked with too much bullshit, it's like you're probably going to be fine. But at the same time, if you do stop and you don't notice any difference, it doesn't really make that much sense to keep on taking it. If you want to take a supplement, creatine's a really good choice. But I also like to try and find ways to make sure. The other reason is I like to make sure that I'm not reaching for a supplement and avoiding doing something that's actually a little bit more inconvenient, but way more fucking important for your recovery. For example, when I really started to work on my sleep and actually make inconvenient but powerful changes in my lifestyle to make sure that I got better quality sleep on average, my training got noticeably better. And when, for example, if you're interested, feel free to shoot me a message and I'll send you my full sleep protocol that I use to get my sleep on track. But now, for example, when I use my screens really late at night, or when I'm working late into the night and I don't spend enough time winding down, I really notice that my sleep is not as good. And that impacts my performance in the gym the next day. So like when I stop doing that, noticed. So that's why I keep doing it. But supplementation just doesn't fall into that same category for me. So the last thing I'd encourage you to think about, if you're looking at reaching supplements, or if you spend a lot of time looking at different supplement protocols, have you applied that same rigor and that same research to how you can improve your sleep, not just through supplementation, but by making hard choices, in your life so that you get better quality sleep and better quality, you know, recovery. Those things are far more important than trying to add supplementation or add ice bars or add massage guns to a body that is not doing its own job recovering well enough. This has been my first Q&A. I really appreciate you guys tuning in, and I hope that you found some interesting and hopefully some quite refreshing perspectives on the stuff around nutrition, on the stuff around recovery, and stuff around stretching. If you have more questions, I'm more than happy to answer them in this long format way. Or if you have a quick question as well, I'm more than happy to answer that as well. If you DM me, and the best thing to do is jump on my email list as well, where you can get direct access to me there. I often answer these questions in more drawn out form over email as well. And if you want to do that, you can head over to the link in my Instagram bio and you'll be able to find the email sign up there. Much love, guys, and I'll catch you next time.